Welcome back to Dating Games, the modern relationships podcast. You're already grinning at me. So today we're doing our first hosts catch-up episode, where we look back at the recent episodes, take a deep dive on any of the really key themes that have come up. And of course, the first one we'll look at is the very first episode with Maisie Adam, recorded long before the pandemic, back in, I think it was November 2019.
Yeah, I think it was. And it was really interesting actually listening to it with no COVID references. Really nice, refreshing, actually.
We don't even realise how in our head this has all got. Like, I've been noticing even when I watch the TV, it can be like a sitcom from years ago. And sometimes I see people hugging and yeah, it feels wrong.
I know, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, because we've been so taught to, like, fear it. And yeah. It gets in your head.
I listen to and watch a table talk all the time with Jada Pinkett, and I'm like literally waiting for the next one to come out. I love it. But yeah, they had to put a caveat in to say the episodes where you see us, you know, hugging and greeting, it's all happened before COVID. So with Maisie Adams, they're talking about, you know, going to the cinema and all those things that they did and being on the train. You just have this picture of like, that normality of like just being able to do stuff.
You almost start liking the sound of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that one to start with. And it's such a kind of typical experience, actually. Like, I think we hear so many dating horror stories and a lot of them are just like, it was awkward and confusing. And that's maybe more relatable than the really extreme stuff.
100%. That would be my worst nightmare. In life, it is. I hate those awkward situations. I don't have them that often. But you know, those really, like when friends are telling me about those really awkward moments, like imagine you're on a train with a guy who lifts up his top to show you a tattoo that's got written on it. What was it?
I think it was, let's do it tonight because we might not get tomorrow.
And I think, what the hell would I say in that situation? For one, put your top down, like we're on the train, come on. So embarrassing. I don't know. And I was waiting to hear, like, and then I just thought, this date isn't going to work, I'm going. But she was 17, and again, you just wouldn't really maybe be that confident in that moment to do that, you know, so to continue on a date.
But I think even grown adults just feel the need to sort of go along with things. And I think there's an element of kind of British culture to that, where you just sort of stiff up a lip through the situation and just hope. I was trying to describe it to someone recently where I think it's something you see even more in London, where like something can kick off on a tube or someone's being really weird and everyone just kind of shrinks a little bit. It's almost like if we do less, it'll somehow balance the situation out.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, let's just pretend it's not happening. Like, this awkward thing that you've created.
Then, and then somehow that will make that true. Yeah. That's kind of what it's like. And in fact, I think Trevor Noah has a whole bit about it, of, like, being at traffic lights and just, like, seeing these crowds of people, like, line up ready to cross the road.
Yeah.
And then one time, like, started like a battle cry and was like, we've been at this crossing for many years, we will take you down, and then charging across the road when the lights go green and everyone's walking around and just ignoring it, whereas he was like, in America everyone would be like, I don't know him, like, he's not with me. In Britain maybe we just sort of like look the other way and hope it will stop.
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, the king of awkward moments, it's got to be Borat. Like, I mean, the whole...
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my God. It's just the whole... That thing of creating awkward moments is so cringy to watch, but we're kind of addicted to it and so funny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so have you seen the new one?
No, I can't wait. I've just seen the clip. Yeah, so funny. But, yeah, it's that awkward, and that's what Maisie Adams was talking about, that just the whole thing being awkward throughout the whole time, you know, sitting like robots watching a film, like no connection at all. And I do think that is an age thing. Like you said, I know it happens still in adulthood, but I think you kind of can own the situation maybe a little bit more as you get a little bit older and a bit more comfortable with what is this, like, I'm not really, there's no point, it's not going anywhere. Or
yeah, although maybe a lot of people still do sit through a bad date and then they just don't go on another one.
Yeah.
If you walk out on a date, is there a good point to walk out? Probably not.
No, I don't think I'd walk out,
you know, and end it early. Maybe
get your friend to phone you, have a mess, that whole thing about having something in your pocket and getting someone to phone you to be like, you've got to come away. But that's, surely no one would believe that. Like, would anyone believe that anymore? Crazy.
I actually think I might be quite good at that. I think my acting's up to it.
Yeah.
It would just have to depend what the friend told me, like a whale in the kitchen.
I mean, my friends tell me a lot of one in particular, like, who's a seasoned dater, especially with the shift to online, which we, another one of our guests speaks about. But a lot of people that are new to it talk about, but how do you say no? Like, what if you don't want to see them again? How do you say no? Like, there's that instant connection now. People know if you've read a WhatsApp message. You know, they know if you're searching them. Like, people know stuff. Like, how do you get away from it? You can't just be like kind of avoid it. And then those who are kind of seasoned daters are like, no. It's really just what you do. It's fine. You can just say, it's not going to work. I'm not interested, and move on. There's not that level. You know what I mean? Like, we'll have a coffee. I don't want dinner. I don't need 3 hours dating with you. Let's have half an hour coffee to start with. And that's the way to get through. If it's just not right, then you move on. Is there less, you know, pressure to pretend because of the whole online dating? You know, now you can just, like, move on to the next one and it not be this pressure of lingering people. I don't know, though. I still think there is probably that, isn't there? The lingering. Maybe it all depends on you as a person.
I mean, that's it. You can overthink it, whatever medium you're communicating.
True.
It was something that came up as well via Eilish's episode, like the power of saying no. Yeah. And being direct with that and not, like, you know, making excuses. And I think that very much applies to online dating. There are certain people that will not get it, and maybe they're choosing not to get it. You can decline a date in a million different ways, but sometimes you have to say no.
Mm.
And I think that's important. I actually sort of ended off communication with someone recently where I didn't see anything for it, who I'd met via an app and we'd seen each other and stuff, but it just wasn't going anywhere. And I think they thought it was, and so I felt the need to sort of put a line in the sand with it. And I googled it because I thought, now I'm a dating podcaster, I'm gonna try and do this right. And
googled what the best way to end it.
Like, initial stages before anything's really kicked off. And Bumble actually have a really good article for it, so I'll try and find that and link it.
Oh.
And so I used their formula. They had it, you basically sandwiched it. You were like, it's been nice getting to know you, blah, blah, blah. So some kind of compliment then. Something quite definite and finite.
Yeah.
Not, I'm quite busy at the moment, because they could take that as, okay, so we'll keep texting until you're not busy.
Yeah.
But something quite finite, say, I don't necessarily see it going somewhere or something like that. And then at the end, you say something nice again, like,
oh, that's great.
Best of luck.
Best wishes. Kindest regards. Good luck. No, but it's great to hear, though, that Bumble and dating apps have got something to kind of support people with that. I would never have known that even exists.
Well, that's very them as well, because they really push to be, like, the ethical one. So the woman that founded it used to work at Tinder, and a lot of then her approach was, how do we not have the issues they have?
Wow.
And so that's very much, I think, where they go with these kind of articles, where they're like, this is something so we can all be a bit nicer to each other and find appropriate ways of handling things.
Yeah, I think it would help in so many, with so many areas where people aren't sure, if we could just find it in us to just be honest and be like, no, it's not working for me. It feels awkward, but so much better in the long run. You know, we know, like, you know, Eilish said, there's so many cultural things that, you know, within your background that, you know, it's just rude to say, no, thanks, I don't want a cup of tea, no, I'm not hungry. I loved all of that in her episode. So it's so true in so many communities. Like, you get offered food, you have it. Doesn't matter if you're full up, you eat or you drink when you go to someone's house. But having, being able to just provide that honesty without people feeling offended, absolutely is the same, isn't it, in dating, that people can be like, it's just not for me, have a good life. That ends it as well, when you say, rather than, oh, I'm a bit busy, maybe in the future. Or that men and women, I don't want to just say men, because I was listening to something the day about consent, and that was interesting as well from a gender point of view. Talking about, you know, men don't always get the hint, but I'm sure women, there's a lot of women out there who also don't get the hint when men try and be kind and be like, you know, this isn't really for me. Obviously, I'm talking about a heterosexual relationship, and women are like, oh, but maybe he does still like me because I really like him. I'm not going to let that go. I'm not going to read the signs. Are you unaware? Or are you purposely saying, I'm not reading those signs. Fuck that. I want him. I'm going to get him. And vice versa. I wonder how, you know, clear you've got to be. It's all about the individual, I guess.
And also, I think there's an element of consenting to communication almost in all of that. Consenting to continue communicating. And people can often not read those signs. And so I think sometimes we need these ways of being direct. And that's where there's kind of these limitations of politeness. It's great to have sort of roundabout ways of communicating with people in other situations. But when it comes to something as serious as dating, you do need to feel empowered to say no and be clear about your feelings and what you want and what you need. And
I love that.
Not just what you want to say no to, but also like what you want to say yes to.
You're onto something there, but you should give yourself a point.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a great tip. Yeah, I think you need a point for that, because that is just like preach, because a consent for communication. Just because we've got, and I find it even with your phone, if I don't want to answer my phone or it's not with me, but there's this pressure to get back to people and to, you know, all the time. And you're right, in dating, like, I might not want to keep this up.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be like really formal. I'm not saying you have to, after a date, be like, are you happy to still hear me? But I think there's like subtler ways you can go about it. And it's a respect thing, because I've definitely had it where I've like been really busy. I'm like, maybe I'm doing a particular job where I'm away for the day. My whole day has to be blocked out, and I've let somebody know who I'm communicating with, and then they've not respected that. And they're like, oh, are you done yet? Are you finished yet? I'm like, this job is till 6. I told you this. If I can't have boundaries on text, how can I trust there to be safe boundaries in a relationship?
My friend was talking to me the other day about a guy sending her pictures of himself naked constantly. There's nothing between them. They've not even had, I think they've had a snog in a club or whatever when we were allowed to go clubbing. And she said, it's just ridiculous. Like, the guy's just on a different level. Like, why would you keep doing that if you're not getting a response? Like,
from then it's about them, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not for her.
No, because that's what she said.
Because there's the irony. I bet if she turned around and she's like, yeah, I like this one, but like, could you wear this kind of outfit and like just tilt your head to the... He'd be like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Yeah. If she then completely turned it around the other side and tried like fetishizing him, that would probably...
yeah, put him off. Maybe that's the thing I need to tell her to do. Because she's like, is this guy for real? Like, he's not getting anything back from me. He's doing it for his own... Like, is he getting off from sending me these pictures of himself? Is that all? That's what he needs, that gratification. Like, and I don't really know. I want to like tell him to stop, but I feel like I don't need to, because he should just know. And I'm like, well, he obviously doesn't, you know. And when you've got kids and you've got phones and tablets and everything's connected, you know, we have to monitor that. You can't just have like naked pictures coming up all over the place, you know. I'm like, girl, you need to tell him. You need to tell him to stop, because he's not getting any cues at all.
Wow. You're right, though, it is so important. In fact, you get a point.
How about Yay! That?
Is that what's going to happen? These episodes will just turn into a competition.
Yeah.
And so that was a kind of contrast, I think, with Olga that was really nice, that she is already very direct. I feel like this is not something she had to learn. And I think for that reason, like, I was very chatty in that interview. And I think a lot of it was that I felt very connected to her. Like, she felt like quite a familiar person to me, if that makes sense. I feel I know a lot of women like her in my life. And then I also went into it assuming our approach to dating would be quite similar.
Right.
And I think it was.
And she's matter of fact, isn't she?
And I like that. And I wonder how much of that is partly cultural as well. It's like her being born in Russia, but she's travelled all over the world, lived in many countries. And maybe that combination gives you a level of kind of confidence that she's had to be maybe her own home in a way, in a lot of cultures that weren't her own.
You know, we live one life, we can be many different people. And so the fact that when you move to a new country or even a new city and have to rebuild, you can rebuild however you want. So it starts to probably give you the confidence that this may not last forever. I'm not going to see these people all the time. You know, people that are born and raised and live in the community that they've lived in all of their lives. And there's a whole culture with that. And you know him and he knows she. And, that, you know, and there's this whole interconnection when you are a traveller. I think that probably really does help and informs her, you know, in the way that she's anyway, is being quite matter of fact. But that probably informs that somewhat, that ability to kind of close one door and open another.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think it was interesting with her background being in computing that then we got talking about dating apps, and it was like so analytical, and even just her approach to dating in general. She even described it as mathematic at one point.
Wow.
Which I quite like, but then maybe that feels appropriate. To me, I get it. Like, I'm very much a thinking person. And so for me, having strategies for good dates is me trying to do the best by everyone. Like, if I can do a certain amount of planning of how am I going to make this date good for both of us, then hopefully we all have a good time. Whereas someone who's maybe a more feeling approach person might think that's a bit too analytical.
Well, yeah, which is me. Just looking at you, staring, thinking, what? Like, no analytics. This is about connection and feeling and being in the moment. But I guess when there's so many opportunities now to date, and people could be dating like literally every day, lunch dates, dinner dates, weekends away, all the different things that you can be doing, FaceTime dates. I guess maybe I can understand the reason to maybe stop structuring a little bit and having some kind of process to your approach, because they're coming thick and fast perhaps. And so we need to start. I haven't really got time. You know, a lot of my women friends who are busy working mums are like, I ain't got time for all this bullshit. I need to know. I need to be on it. Are we in? Are we out? What are we doing? Are we on a second date? If not, move on. Like, people don't have the time for all the fluffy stuff, I guess. But on the other hand, you never know. Overthinking stuff, you never know the other person's approach. So, you know, somebody might be in it to have a good time on that date and make that moment the best it can be without all the extra stuff that's attached to it. Like, what will it be? Is there a future? Is there a date too? I need to know, and all that kind of stuff. You might just literally go into it for that moment to enjoy. And therefore, maybe there is an element of planning, because you might have got to know the person on the phone a little bit, so you know what they like. So you choose somewhere that works for you both, so you can both have fun, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's the way I would kind of rationalise it. Like, is that not the ethical thing, that you take your past dating experiences and find a way to kind of apply that as learning? Like, is that not in the best interest of everyone?
No.
Okay, well, that's what I tried. You know,
yeah, maybe.
And one example is that you've reminded me of, like, I try and really set the bar low with my expectations. When I go on a date, I very much try and treat it as I'm meeting a new person, I'm extroverted, that's exciting for me. I've obviously got some kind of interest, or at the very least, they seem okay to talk to, you know, go along and hope to have a good time. And then if there's a spark there, if there's any kind of connection, then that's like above the bar. So then I'm pleasantly surprised by that, because I think when I was younger, I went into it very much building people up in my head and then could be quite disappointed. So now I try and really treat it as like what it is. You're meeting somebody new. You don't know what this is. We'll find out. And if you don't hate the date, then that's a win, as opposed to
if we get married, that's a win. Yeah, I think that's a great approach, though. And that's just more about awareness, Bob. You know, using your experiences maybe to create awareness in yourself. That's all that is. And that's absolutely, like, we love self-awareness around here, don't we? So going into it with the element of self-awareness about what your expectations are, that's all cool.
Yeah.
Says me, who's been on millions of dates for my whole life and not just with one guy for 20 years. But, you know, talk to a lot of people, hear a lot about dates every day, and I reckon that's a great approach.
Well, maybe that's part of it, maybe because I'm still in it. There's also an element of I don't want awkward, yucky dates.
Yeah.
And so it's partly trying to just smooth over any issues preemptively. Mm. But I guess even talking with Olga about it, it makes us sound like we're going in almost with, you know, this very computer brain of like, how do we engineer the situation? And actually it's sort of partly from a place of vulnerability of like, how do I open up without scaring them off? Is there anything else you wanted to say about Eilish's episode?
Loved everything about Eilish. There was just so much depth to the episode, from dating when she was so young or meeting somebody, moving forward, you know, into her life and her stories, and as a comedian talking about her show, just everything that she spoke about, the depth in her learning and understanding and growth, and funny, obviously it was hilarious, but it's just inspiring. I love that. I love who have lived a life and who are able to reflect on it and grow and talk about their growth and their reflections. I could listen to that all day, you know.
Yeah. You've just reminded me of something that was funny in editing, that I heard a few things and it sounded like coughs. And I thought, are the gamers going to get worried? Has she got COVID? Because we're so sensitive to hearing coughs now. And it wasn't. It was her, like, slapping her leg.
Was it?
You know, just a very, like, cartoonish type of, like, approach to humour, where something would be really funny and she just, like, couldn't get over it. She had to physicalise it. And it took me a moment to figure out what that noise was. But that's editing Zoom calls. Because for some context, we are using slightly different audio depending on how it comes out. So on some of the episodes, you'll hear the person that's not speaking chuckling along, and on other ones you won't. So it depends whether we've got like the audio from just one side or we've pulled both channels mm-hmm. at the same time, and it's just like frustrating technical COVID necessity.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought we'll leave in those slaps, even if they sound like coughs.
No, I can imagine, because having heard it, I can imagine at the times when she laughed that she would do that. I can see her doing that. It's hilarious. She was so good, so funny, great episode.
But we've been so lucky with the guests, and obviously one of the guests was you as well, because that's the one thing we haven't talked about, the episode we did together.
Yeah.
How did you find that?
No, it's good. So I don't tell that story as much as I would have done over the years when I was in my 20s, like. So hearing me talk about it again in my own way now, and how I see it, maybe, and how I tell it, may be different slightly to how, obviously the facts are the facts, but how I told it then. So actually I sent it to Anthony and I said, you've got to listen to this, it's funny. And he was like, oh my God, what have you been saying? And I'm like, no, it's just funny, just listen to what we were like when we were young. It's quite a nice moment for us. We were cooking the other day and I was talking to him about it, and it's a bit of nostalgia. We needed it.
Well, there's some behind the scenes as well that I had to sort of like pull you out of it slightly, because you were very ready to like talk about it all like in hindsight, and I was like, for this to make sense, you're going to have to talk about how you thought about it at the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's what I tried to do. So it's funny hearing myself talk about that, as I would have been thinking, you know, as an 18-year-old.
But I loved it, and I can't believe I'd never heard that story. But I think that's what we're like. We talk about so many big topics, and like, I don't know what your favourite colour is.
Like, oh gosh, yeah.
I don't know a lot of the small stuff. But then I think maybe we're both a bit like that anyway, with how we get to know people. We like jump at the big stuff.
Yeah. And I think actually you forget, you and I, with the work that we've done, it's our job. But because on mental and on dating games, we talk about so much that there's just a connection and a friendship, because we know each other in terms of our values and our beliefs and what we love and what we don't like. So we've built quite a unique friendship that I guess maybe people in other work situations wouldn't always build, and also in friendship groups, if we just met once a month for dinner, we may not also have talked and learned so much about each other.
Yeah, well, we've sort of been forced in a way to talk about a lot of the serious stuff as well.
It's me asking you all these questions. Talk to me. You're Jenna. I want to know everything about what's going on in your world. Tell me about dating. Tell me about apps. Tell me about life. Like, what's going on? Like, bring me back in touch, Bob. You know, like, I'm thinking I come into this job. I'm thinking I know quite a bit of stuff, I think. And I always want to learn more. And then you meet Bobby. And then there's a whole new world of information and approach and outlook, which has just been brilliant.
I think that's the thing. I don't actually think I know a lot of stuff. I think I just think about everything. I'm like very in-depth and analytical, and so I have an opinion on everything, and maybe I come across as having more experience than I do.
No, you have an opinion on stuff. No, it's not even that. It's just the way that you maybe view the world and some of your experiences that you have got. I mean, let's talk like dating. I know you've got a story for me, which I'm excited about, but even dating and your experiences with different people from different backgrounds and the people that you date and how you see yourself or put yourself out there in the world, that's all been absolutely novel to me. And you often see it as it's just so nothing.
I think it's so the opposite for me, right? Because I'm very aware that I only have my perspective on it, that I'm coming, particularly sexuality is a good example, I'm so coming from my perspective that sometimes I think I sort of take that for granted. It's strange to kind of describe, I guess. A lot of people are raised in a way that is very heteronormative. Mm-hmm. And I think I didn't have as much pressure in that way growing up, which was nice. And I think I've been so used to sort of being my own advocate, being a very parentified child, which people can hear about on our other podcast, I'm sure. And so I've been used to like fighting my own corner and viewing the world very in my own way. But then the flip side of that is how sometimes people can have a kind of straight bias, where they just, you know, assume like a boy and a girl that are friends might be dating. Like, I even had that with my sister growing up. Like, we look quite different. And so every so often I'd bump into somebody in town and they'd wonder if she was my girlfriend, which, of course, it feels so strange.
Talk about awkward.
Yeah, but that sometimes we make those assumptions. Mm. And I think mine are very the opposite way around, where sometimes, like, friends will catch me and I'll be like, oh, those two would be so good together. And they're like, those two straight women. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because that's how I am. I'll date people of any gender and therefore I see the world in that way.
100%. And it's not a thing that you think about. Like you said, it's your lens and it's your genuine lens of the world.
Yeah, I only have to explain it when other people get confused.
And you don't really like, I don't want to say you don't like explaining. My opinion would be you would like a world where there aren't any explanations and that we just...
I guess no need for them.
Yeah.
But it varies. And I sometimes have weird experiences with that when it comes to sexuality, where people are surprised by their own assumptions. Like if I've mentioned an ex of a particular gender, they've maybe assumed, oh, that's the gender that he dates.
Yeah.
Maybe they say it and maybe I correct them. And then they're kind of surprised. They're like, oh, but I didn't know. And I'm like, well, I don't think we've ever really talked about relationships.
Yeah.
You know, there's maybe this expectation where it's so I think it's quite difficult to understand my perspective. And sometimes people get confused of me talking about the British in third person, unless they've realised that I'm Irish or I've mentioned something. Whereas with sexuality, I think a lot of the time it just doesn't come up. Maybe for me, it just matters less than it does for some people.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. And it's interesting and I've learned a lot. And hopefully I've kind of passed on that learning to a lot of people, maybe not just my age, but background and, you know, that come from certain places that have not maybe thought that way before and felt that need to say, oh, you know, oh, so you're gay. No, not necessarily. I date women as well. Oh, so you're bisexual. Not really. There's like a spectrum. I don't really label anything. I'm not talking about you necessarily. I'm just talking about, you know, for example.
Yeah, no, but you're right. And I do come across that a bit where people really want to give me a label. And I don't really care. If that is the way for them to understand it, then fine. But then don't hold it against me if I don't fit up to your stereotypes of the label you've given me. I don't identify as any set thing in that way. I just identify as myself. It's all unique and complicated for every person.
Mm. To some people, it's quite a novel way to see the world, potentially.
And what tends to happen is, I've noticed, in dating, people assume I'm the sexuality they are. In most cases, I had an ex that identified as lesbian before and after me. So discounting her from it for a moment.
Right.
And I guess that's just, you know, it's a familiarity bias. You often assume things are similar with people that you like. You assume kind of commonality before you necessarily confirm it, which is nice. It's our way of kind of trying to bond and trying to almost subconsciously bias ourselves towards someone.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm not good at even talking about it, to be honest.
Yeah, only because of that lesser, that lack of importance that you put on it, really. But I think that's what I'm talking about when I talk about it being a completely unique lens. Like, there are other people in the world, obviously, that have that lens. But, you know, it's still quite novel. It's a minority, a real minority, I think, of people that have that lens. You know?
But I guess I don't feel like that, though, because I just feel I'm myself.
I know.
And that's what the sort of overriding thing is.
Well, you need a point, mister. Because I just think that the learning from that is, let's not assume shit in life, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. But also, do ask questions. Like, if you want to clarify, there's nice ways of doing it. I mean, one thing I would recommend to anyone straight, for example, if you want to be kind of more inclusive in asking sexuality labels, self-disclose first. It makes it sound a bit like less like an accusation. If you say, I'm straight, what about you?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to being like, so what are you?
Yeah.
You know, that in the same way, you know, I think that goes for other things. It goes with ethnicity. And this is something that I sometimes catch people out on. If I feel they're being a bit hostile about it, if me or like a friend of mine has someone say, so what are you then? Where are you from? And often it is people of colour that can be asked it in quite a direct way like that. And then sometimes if I do feel that's hostile, I'll ask in return, oh, what about you? And sometimes you see it flash across people's face because they're not used to being asked.
Yeah, they're like, what do you mean? Where am I from here? Like, my country.
Yeah.
This is me.
And then my friend says, oh, yeah, me too. Like, yeah. You know, because what it's really about is you're not white. I have questions.
Mm.
There's a time and a place, you know, I'm all for understanding people's culture and trying to get an idea of people. Being culturally sensitive often comes with a necessity to understand the background of the person, for example, but there's a way that can make it an accusation mm-hmm. and make it hostile, and there's a way of being like, oh, you know, what was your background growing up? And then if someone doesn't really want to go into it, they can be like, oh yeah, I've got two sisters. They can answer it in a different way.
Yeah, I get that.
It's just my ways of trying to be compassionate.
And it's beautiful. And while we're talking about that, date information, I need it.
Right, okay, yeah. So, gamers, for context, I refused to tell Danielle before recording. I was like, no, there'll be plenty of time for that. I've been putting myself out there again on the apps and stuff with lockdown. I think I talked about in August episode not really knowing what to do.
Mm.
Like feeling like I've sort of wanted to date again, but not knowing how possible that is. Whereas since recording that a little while ago, things have lifted a bit more. And yeah, now I've been kind of going on socially distanced dates. Obviously, that's as the restrictions have tightened recently, that's restricted what the options are. But it's been nice to sort of be meeting people again, talking to new people and reminding myself I'm both better at this than I thought I was. And also this is so much more like awkward and hard work than I remembered.
Right. Wow.
But I do have one experience that was actually very good to tell you about, which was I matched with someone, I guess, a few weeks ago now, and we were chatting. It was just really easy conversation. He came in with a good, like, first message. I think I had, like, a picture from a modelling shoot up, and it was one of, like, me and another model at the agency, and he's sort of, like, glaring at me. It's, you know, it's all very model facial expressions,
right.
Portraying drama in the shot.
Right.
And he was like, I have to know the story behind this. And, you know, that was quite a new message for me. There's so many of those highs or hays. And I don't know, maybe they have their place. But for someone to ask something direct is quite nice. And then you get to go straight into the conversation rather than the, like, how has your week been? And I'm like, I don't know. You're a stranger. I don't know what's relevant to answer this question with. And anyway, we got chatting and it was just really easy conversation and we had a lot in common. I had a feeling from certain things he was saying about politics at the moment that he might be a fellow Green Party supporter.
Oh.
And I don't meet as many of those as I maybe would like in the wild. So that was nice. So I guess we can call him Green Guy as his nickname.
Right.
I'm not a huge texter, really. I find it quite hard work. And with the dyslexia, I, like, proofread everything. It really slows me down. Things seem to be going well. And so I said we should hop on a phone call. And he was like, oh, actually, I'd rather FaceTime if that's okay, because I feel like you lose a lot with the facial expressions. I'm quite an expressive person. Which checked out because he's very heavy on the emojis.
Right.
Like in an endearing way.
Yeah, yeah.
But more so than me. But I'm trying to mirror that, you know.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's not.
But hold on, pause there.
Huh?
So was this planned, this FaceTime? Or was this like, he's saying, now should we go on it? Because that's pressure.
Ooh.
Or did you say, okay, we'll FaceTime tomorrow at 2, like you would a date, so you can at least get a bit ready?
Well, this is where my memory fails me. No, I think it was either at the time or it was maybe like, oh, this evening or something. I don't think it was like planned ahead. Yeah, and just had a really nice chat. And it just felt like, you know, sometimes you connect with new people and they already feel quite familiar and easy to talk to. So I was like, this is nice, particularly when the dating apps at the moment are very everybody looking, nobody talking.
Mm.
I think maybe had another FaceTime call at some point and then I was like looking at my weekend and it was a bit emptier than I would have liked, as is, you know, pandemic life.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, what are you doing tomorrow? And it turned out he was free. I think I rung him and was FaceTimed him, I guess, and was like, oh, what should we do? Let's plan something. Yeah, just there and then planned to like go for a walk together. He has a husky cross dog.
Oh.
He's adorable. And so, yeah, that was the obvious thing. And he's only had her for a few months. So she's not, you know, in the position to be, like, left at home on her own or whatever.
Right.
So that was the obvious thing. We go for a dog walk and we met in between where we live. And it was just really nice. And I think so novel for me, like I have a cat. I can't say I particularly understand dogs, but I like them. And so
Robbie has a cat that doesn't go out. That's another thing. Robbie has a house cat, which is, I think at the moment she's in a box above us, in a cardboard box. She's the most beautiful, like purple Persian gorgeous thing. But yeah, Bobby has a cat and a cat that doesn't go outside, so there's no opening doors and things like that.
I don't need to worry about walking her, no.
No.
Yeah, and actually, I think it was a really nice, chill day. And I, like I said, I, you know, try and always go in with a low bar. Mm-hmm. And I was so pleasantly surprised. And I think a lot of it was actually the distraction of the dog. Because, you know, she's still training, and so he's having to kind of keep an eye out for other dogs that she might react to and sort of keep an eye on what she's doing. And then I'm also distracted because I'm not used to being around dogs. And so actually there was, like, you know, more silences and stuff than I would have on, like, a sit-down day. Mm. But in a way that was quite nice and familiar, and it sort of felt like a sort of sweet snapshot into, like, oh, this is what this dynamic would be like, you know, going on dog walks. And there were, I'm trying not to oversell it in case I have nothing to talk about by next month.
I am actually melting. No, but even for the moment, like, let's just melt in the moment. Like, that's just gorgeous.
Very good day. And it was also intense in a nice way, not being like super like asking loads of questions, but instead sort of like elements of co-parenting a little bit together. Like, at one point he had to go to the loo and I was a bit worried because he was like, oh, she's gonna like act up and probably whine a bit when I leave,
and like thinking, oh my god.
And also, like, she's a, you know, she's a big dog and would react to other dogs, not out of malice, but just kind of wants to play with them or is excited.
You then had to, like...
And so then I felt a lot of responsibility and I fully said, could you maybe hold it?
Did you?
Yeah, and he was like, no, I'll need to go to loo at some point. And I was like, fine. But actually, I think by that point, I built up a certain rapport. And so I just, like, got up. We had lunch outside and I went and sat next to the dog and kind of gave her a bit of a cuddle because she was sad when he left. And once he'd rounded the corner, then she was relatively okay. And aww. So it was sort of just little things like that, or like a kid came up and like asked to pet the dog, like the parents would be like, make sure you ask, which is sweet. And he didn't hear her, so I was like, oh yeah, of course, on his behalf.
Did you?
So just little elements of that where I was like, oh, this is sweet, and I feel like a familiarity with you and with this situation.
Wow, is that your first dog walking date, I presume?
Yeah.
I think that's a really good idea, though, having a bit of a distraction on a date.
Well, Olga says that, I think, about having activity dates.
Yeah.
And then it's like, if you have fun with the activity, then you'll associate that fun time with the person.
Yeah, and also you get to see more of the character. So it's not just questions and answers back and forward. Because I always think, even on a date, even if I'm on a date with Anne, in, you know, my relationship, but just how you are with the waiter, how you are, you know, those other little behaviours that you see in somebody. And if you've got a dog, to see how, like, loving they are, or maybe quite firm, you know, some of the behaviours that you just wouldn't see on a face-to-face dinner. Like, you start to see, you know, if you're on a climbing a wall date, you know, are they up for climbing the wall? Are they getting frustrated? Just, I don't know, little other things. I think that's a really good idea. I love walking the dog date, and I'm not a big dog lover. I mean, dogs are cool. My mum's got a dog. I've had to grow to love this dog, which I do now. Absolutely love Zach. But not really been brought up with dogs. But I guess I could, a dog walking date is the dream. I'm excited by it.
Yeah, I felt quite won over.
Yeah.
So it was nice, and I very much, I think I can say the dog's name. So the dog's called Sasha, and I think I really won over Sasha as well, because then when I left, I had to like run off to a work thing afterwards, and so kind of had to leave quite suddenly to get a train then. And he was cool about it and was like, no, get your train, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I ran off to get my train, and apparently then Sash just lay down because she assumed they were waiting for me, that I was going to come back. And then I know.
Oh my God.
And this is the thing that so warms my heart. And so she was then like getting taken back to the car and kept sitting down because she was like, no, we've left the other one.
That's their natural thing, to like round up, you know, the people that they've been with and connected with. You know, dogs like to, you know, if I go on a run with, walk with my mum, and I go off on a run, you know, Zach will wait for me to come back or follow me, and then get my mum, like, round us up, you know, if they've connected with somebody. So the fact that Sasha's like, where's Bobby?
Yeah, so I found that actually such a Such a compliment. And it, yeah, like I guess I'm part of the pack is what it
Yeah,
felt
that,
like.
yeah.
And I think he thought that was sweet as well. Like, I don't think he was like, oh, she's a pain getting her back into the
Yeah,
car.
yeah.
Like, I think he also found that quite sweet behavior. And so, yeah, we've like continued chatting every day via text predominantly and going on another date this weekend. So it's nice. It's like I've had a lot of drama in my dating past that I'm
Yeah.
sure will come up on the podcast. So it's nice to. Whilst very much, this really is just dating early days, it's nice to be getting to know somebody where it feels quite laid back and chill and adult and straightforward.
Oh yeah, I love that. And I must say to the game is that for Bobby, I respect you for that because it's not that it's not easy. I mean, come on, we're in a massive pandemic at the moment, but it's still a thing to open up. Like, we're doing a dating games podcast. You're a single guy out there dating, so there's like, how much do I talk about on the show? Like you said, I could be really happy, and then next week's like, the gamers and me, we're going to want to go along with you. So, I think you can be as open or as closed as you want to be, and that can vary from week to week. But you're open to sharing your experiences. But yeah, things. You're dating somebody who could be listening to this next week, and so you have got to you're having to be a little bit aware about that, aren't you?
Yeah, well, this is very much the major catch of this podcast that I've not figured out yet, is this may well make me significantly less dateable. And I don't yet know how to bring up, oh, I have a dating podcast. Because I have it with mental, like I will mention that I do podcasting and maybe I'll keep it a bit vague. Generally, I do tell people my one thing is I try and stress like I'd rather you get to know me personally, directly rather than via the shows. And part of that is like I've had some bad experiences via mental where if people go and binge my content in a dating scenario with that, they see me differently. They see me as this mental health advocate, which I
Yeah,
am,
yeah.
but then potentially treat me a bit too much like an agony aunt or a counsellor, and
Yeah.
it can sort of change a dynamic. And so I'd rather they build up an actual connection to me rather than kind of an assumed one via my content.
Yeah.
And I think dating games will probably be even more so like that,
Yeah. I mean,
where.
Maisie said it, didn't she? Same with her. When you're a comedian, you've got shows online and on YouTube. How much does somebody get to know you first? And I think that's fair. And mental health and dating games are quite key things, like that people can learn a lot from. Unfortunately, Bob, you're all over the internet, and as soon as anybody puts Bobby in or finds one thing, they can see everything else. So what? Like, you're living your life and you're having experiences. Like, it's cool. Like, good for you. There wasn't anything to hide, is there?
No, definitely not. To be fair, I'm generally not with people like avoiding questions. I'm maybe just not having a whole like, oh, these are all the things
No,
I do,
laying
and
it
this,
out.
yeah. And I think I'm like that with anything, and I think that's kind of the way you do it in dating. In the same way, someone can ask about your family, and if it's at first date, you say, oh, maybe you mention your parents are together or what they do for a living or how many siblings you've got. Whereas when you're in a relationship with someone, they ask about your family, it's a whole different level of depth.
Yeah.
So I kind of see it like that. And actually, I don't necessarily think people would always be that interested. Because if I look at it the other way around, I ask about someone's job and they say, and generally, you want to know what the job is, you want to kind of wrap your head around it, but you don't necessarily need to know like too much.
No, absolutely. You're right. And I think it depends on the person. You'd hope that they wouldn't like, I don't really like watching trailers because they ruin a movie. So if I'm meeting anybody, even at work, work's a bit different. I might check them out a little bit on LinkedIn, but only just to see where I'm connecting at what level or who this person is in terms of if we've got any familiar connections and things. But, a friend of mine said the other day she was dating somebody, and this guy's quite popular in the world. And she was like, I just don't want to go on to like his personal Instagram. Like, we're not sharing like social media because I don't need to see all of his like family, all of his pictures, see him in different lights, his quote, all the different things that he's talking about. I just want to meet him and not have this massive like perception, because it's hard not to. It's hard if you see someone on holiday in their trunks, do you know what I mean? And then you've also seen them like at work. Like, I don't need to see all that until it happens. I'd like to experience going on holiday with you first without seeing all your holiday pics with all your mates, or just don't need to see all that. It changes things. And I think it's the same, like I said, with movies and things. I don't want it to be, I don't want it to ruin it. I don't want to know the score before I watch the game. I don't want it to ruin it. So I think it depends on the individual as well. You can't stop it happening, but you would just hope then that person that you do end up connecting with and really getting along, maybe they've got that kind of similar approach that they want to meet you and learn about you.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? Because it's partly it's vulnerable how much you tell somebody about yourself. You know, it's all things that they could potentially judge you on. But, you know, I'm looking to date people that aren't judgmental of the things that I do.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. But then also, I think you're right. And I think that can be a risk for, like, building somebody up too much. You know, like, if you've got somebody on all your social media who you're in quite early days with, if you've only gone on maybe, like, 2-3 dates and you've exchanged all your social media, then I think you can get maybe over-invested because it feels like, oh, we're connected in all these ways now, and I am seeing photos of them and all these things, whereas actually what really matters is how you guys get on directly.
Yeah.
It's that prioritising of, I'm invested in you getting to know me.
Absolutely, and maybe people then need to be a little bit aware of understanding, like, not to even try. You know, you said that communication consent, and we spoke earlier about how much you then share with somebody or talk to them and how regularly you do it, or when you say no to somebody if they're going to be offended. It's a bit like social media, like, be careful in that way, because, like, you go out there and try and connect with someone on social media after date one, they might not want to connect with you, so then they say no or ignore it or block it, and then that becomes a thing, you know? So technology is kind of forcing us to have to make decisions maybe that we wouldn't want to make and offend people that we wouldn't want to offend. You know what I mean? So stay away from it for the first few dates, I reckon. That would be my advice.
Yeah, like, I'm not...
Not that I'm out here trying to give advice, but you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Ultimately, I just talk about what comes up, and if it feels too vulnerable to share that thing, then I just talk about it a bit lighter or a bit in less detail. Like, that's all I guess it comes down to. And yeah, so that's a recent dating experience.
Oh, I'm excited about it.
Well, we will see what happens. As I said, very early days, but very good first date.
Yeah, cool.
A star.
Brilliant. And that's what I'm excited about, just the moment that you had the experience, and, like, no expectations, just really nice that you had a nice time with someone and a dog.
Oh yeah, she's so cute. Your face.
Well, do you know what came into my head then? And I thought, Dan, why are you thinking further in the future when you've just whole spoken about this moment and enjoying the moment? Because when you said that, then I thought about that little munchkin up there in the box, and I thought, I don't think Milan would like it. Did you come back smelling of dog?
I mean, well, that's Milan being a house cat. She doesn't know shit. Oh, she's just happy for any new smell.
She doesn't know.
She just doesn't know what a dog is. No. But yeah, you're right. You could think about those things, or you could be like, okay, I'm getting to know this person. That's the way I try and do it. Like,
yeah, green guy.
Green guy.
That's what we're calling him.
So maybe there'll be updates next episode, maybe.
Maybe there won't.
It all fizzled out. All right, so I think that's everything for this one. First host catch-up.
Yeah, and we've spoken loads, Bob. I'm sure there'll be so much editing that you'll be doing. I think we've got some really good gems in there. I loved that conversation.
Yeah, always. And thank you to the gamers for tuning in, for sticking with us. It's early days. We're still finding our feet with the podcast, and it's one of those things where it's been an incredibly valuable time that we've got to launch a new project in this time. The working on it, the having a bit more time to work on it has been great. The actual launching it and getting it out there when we can't do launch parties or do the kind of networking we'd normally do and that sort of stuff, that's been tricky. So feel free to give us feedback and
support us.
Yeah, and in future episodes we'll read out reviews and yeah, communicate more back. But for now, we've got some great episodes on the way, and just really excited to have you here and have a new platform to explore.
Wow.
Grand. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.